GoDaddy.com. Use the code PODSAVE, that's PODSAVE 139, for $5 off of orders that are $30 or more. GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1238, April 30th, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from home once again. it seems like this week has gone by very quickly. I don't know, the whole time I've kind of felt tired. I think part of the reason, you know, is my own fault, because I've stayed up too late, and then I've had a hard time sleeping with this shoulder. Now, you know, of course, it's the thing, once I lay down, it tends to ache. And sometimes both of them tend to ache, because the other rotator cuff, you know, I've had it injured in the past, and so it's... the pain in it kind of comes and goes, and I think I've been overcompensating since I injured the other side, or bruised it, or whatever. But today I'm noticing that even though it's still sore, I'm actually able to raise my arm better than I was. Now, I don't know if that's because a couple of nights ago I started that exercise video. I'm planning on doing that kind of carrying that forward probably two or three times a week, and with both shoulders, not just one of them, but with both of them. And so I don't know if that's kind of ended up helping me able to be able to raise it. So I think that it definitely is getting better. It's still sore, of course, but I think it's getting better. So... in any case, as I say, I've been kind of tired and, just kind of feeling, not really like doing much of anything, other than just kind of, I've met my friend Gene up in Bentonville for lunch, and today I met my, or up in Bella Vista rather, and today I met my youngest brother, went and got him. He works in Farmington, Arkansas, which is near, just in northwest Arkansas. He went to his office and picked him up, and went up the street and had lunch with him. And so then I stopped at Walmart and did a little bit of shopping. I was in there for a couple of minutes, and then afterwards came on home and kind of began messing with the computers again. My goal has been to, after I got this Windows Home server, on Tuesday, late Tuesday afternoon, my goal has been to kind of get the thing set up and then back up as many machines as possible. Now, that backing up, full backups of today's hard drives takes a long time, even if you've got them plugged in. I'm not backing them up through Wi-Fi, because that's, Wi-Fi is kind of slow when you're dealing with massive files. You really need to plug it into Ethernet instead, and that speeds it along quite a bit faster, but still, it's a lengthy process. When you're talking 200 or 300 gigabytes worth of data, depending on the drive in question, it takes a while. And so I've got, let's see, I've backed up one, two, three complete machines. I'm working right now on the fourth one. Right now, that MacBook Pro, that's the one that I use most of the time, the 17-inch, it's backing up, and it probably has the most data on the hard drive. And so it's been backing up, I don't know, I started it probably sometime around 3:30, probably 4 o'clock this afternoon or a little after. And so it's been working several hours, and it still has a ways to go. So it's going to take it a few more hours before it finishes. And then after that, I will have all of the major machines backed up to the server. And then I may, if I have time, I can back up a couple of virtual, I've got a virtual machine to back up, that XP virtual machine that I created. Might as well go ahead and back it up. And then I've got a very small, just regular installation of Windows XP on this white plastic MacBook, and I can back it up probably pretty quickly. It won't take it long to back up. And then I'll have basically everything that I use backed up, except with one exception, the Mac Mini. Of course, it's running a kind of an incompatible version of OS X. It has a PowerPC chip, and it's running an older version of OS X. I think the original version of OS X. And so I don't know. You know, I can probably get some software and then simply manually back it up to the server. Probably there's this program called SuperDuper, and it's got a 40 gigabyte hard drive in it, and so there's probably, I don't know, maybe 30 gigabytes worth of data, 30 to 35 gigabytes worth of data on it, and I could back it up probably relatively quickly. So may go ahead and do that. It just depends on how much time I have. But my main goal was to get all of the machines that I'm using on a regular basis an image-based backup on that server. And I've kind of been messing with the server otherwise because some of the other functions that it does, it sort of centralizes all of the media that you have on each computer that's being backed up. It sort of centralizes everything. And in other words, puts a copy of every video, photograph, MP3 music, different types of audio files, centralizes that all onto the server, and then which that enables you to kind of share that back out on your network to various devices. Including iTunes and like Apple TV, then of course that other thing that I have, or that when I bought the last time I was home, the Blu-ray player is also capable of connecting to computers through the network and playing different types of videos and what have you. So I've been experimenting with this, and this is, so I've really feel like I've made a lot of progress with that server. And I'm just mostly just accepting the defaults that they give you with the because it's basically the Windows Home Server. Now this is version 3 point something. It's version 3 basically, and I think they've got a beta version like 3.5, but I'm not going to be upgrading anytime soon. Because you have if this is stable, then there's no point in upgrading it. As long as it's doing what it's supposed to do, there's really not a point to upgrade it. You know, unless they come up with some startling new addition that to the software that would make it worthwhile. But I really don't think that they will. You know, when I come up with a new point version of, let's say, you know, you go from Windows XP to Windows Vista. Why, really? I mean, Vista doesn't really add any functionality very much. Then you go to Windows Vista to Windows 7. Windows 7 is just really a more polished version of Windows Vista. It's Windows Vista is a resource hog compared to Windows XP. And I think Windows 7 is not quite as bad as Windows Vista is, but still, it's basically Windows Vista that's been kind of polished a lot. So, but there's on a server, since it's kind of sitting behind a firewall, there's really, and its functionality is kind of limited, and it's, you know, I'm not browsing on it, I'm not doing much with it, other than it's just got a function. It's almost like an appliance. And so, as long as your appliance is functioning, there's really no reason to upgrade the appliance. And, you know, unless the appliance wears out or the appliance breaks, then you have to fix the appliance. But it's just a server. This Windows Home server is almost more, it's more like an appliance. And as such, it's running, that's based on Windows Server 2003, Windows Business Server. It's like Small Business Server. They came out with this version, and I think now they have Small Business Server 2008. But a server operating system, a server version of Windows or any other server operating system, is more of a bare-bones operating system, and they try to make it as reliable as possible. And so this thing just sits there, and it just crunches away. You're backing up to it. It may be serving files. And so in the meantime, it's got software in there that is actually, at the same time that it's backing up, which that doesn't take too much resources, at the same time, it's kind of going through all of the videos that it's collected off my other computers on the network, and it's converting them into file format into file formats that I will be able to play on as broad a variety of devices as possible. So you know, it's got some functionality, and then you can put what are called, they're calling them add-ins for Windows Home Server, and they're basically different programs that you can install on that, different pieces of software that sort of add different types of functionality to your home network. Now, you know, based, you know, on the server. And I really haven't looked through those very much. At this point, I just want, you know, I'm looking for backup and to experiment with media serving. And it probably won't be too long, and I'm going to have to, I probably need to get an add another drive to it. It came with a 1.5 terabyte drive already installed in one of the front-loading bays, and it's got three more bays that are open. And each one of those can, I believe, can take up to a 2 terabyte drive. Or there may be a higher limit than that, but I think 2 terabytes is about, that's about what they've gotten to at this point. I might be wrong about that, but in any case, yeah, I may want to add a 2 terabyte drive to it at some point, and that they're fairly inexpensive. You know, I've seen them online for around under $140. So, you know, I may well get to the point where I need to, well, I know I'm going to get to that point because I want to, you know, I'm always creating media myself in the form of podcasts and videos. and I'm always accumulating stuff, and I have more photos to scan in. I want to finish scanning in, you know, working on the project where I'm scanning in as many of my parents' photo collection as I possibly can, from, you know, kind of dating back, you know, when we were kids growing up, and before that, before we were even born. And I've also got some, probably quite a few of my own 35 millimeter negatives left to go. And so that is going to continue to take space. And so eventually what I want to do is build a complete library of kind of centralized library of photographs. And then I'm going to have to really go through some sort of a process at some point of kind of categorizing those, and, you know, because there's different types of images that you collect, and you have family images and scenery type stuff and just all sorts of different images. So and that results in just thousands and thousands and thousands of images. And this server is really a way to go. Really the way to go to kind of back that stuff up. And at some point I may have to look at some methodology of actually backing the server itself up. But at this point I'm just, you know, kind of experimenting with getting the server and using the server as a backup. So I don't know. It's interesting. It's a very interesting thing to experiment with. And as I say, it's not just another Windows box. It's actually more of an appliance. And in a server, in a server version, you think, oh, it's Windows, it's horrible. Well, Windows in a server environment is actually pretty stable. You know, because you're not running programs on it. You're not really exposing it to the internet. It's just sitting there crunching away. And of course, this is really more of a server, you know, an appliance type machine that's built to be reliable, as opposed to a consumer machine that's really not. They don't, you know, there's a difference in the quality of the hardware that they use and how they engineer the thing together. And so this is just kind of like a little box that's sort of like a hard drive appliance in a way. So but it's kind of got some specialized functions. And as I say, you can install software on there that will actually add functionality to it. So, but it's, I don't know, it's really, I'm kind of enjoying playing with the thing, as you probably have figured out by now. So, I've kind of had that going on, and that's kind of been the main thing. I've just been kind of hanging around the house and, sort of, messing around with that, and, you know, and kind of feeling tired. Now, I don't know what, you know, even today, I was just kind of feeling tired and kind of moping around. And then now, this evening, I'm feeling more energetic than ever, and I don't know why. Now, what I ended up doing, I got another Netflix movie in the mail yesterday, and it's called The Trojan Horse, and I'm going to play the trailer for it. And, you know, it's kind of an interest. It's a very long movie. I don't know how many minutes it was, but it seemed like it was like 3 hours long. It's interesting. I was poking around on Netflix the other day, and I found this movie. It's called The Trojan Horse, or Trojan Horse, and it's a political movie. It was actually made in Canada, And it's got some, you know, it's this guy that's, you know, there's this conspiracy. This guy's trying to run for president. And it's got it part of the story. It's almost like they had Barack Obama in mind, in a way. You know, not exactly, but there's some interesting parallels to the story. So I'm going to go ahead and play the trailer for Trojan Horse and be right back.
Imagine our world if the United States did control the two largest proven oil reserves in Saudi Arabia and the Canadian tar sands. Her power would be greater than anything we can imagine.
Tango One, this is Com. We got three. Correction, four, exiting the northwest structure.
Okay, Tango One, switching views. Go get your targets.
Locking auto range. Auto range locked. I got him.
Okay, hit him.
I'm going to come straight to the point. We share a problem, and that problem is America.
Come, it's just El Dorado. We're some shit here.
Together, we will return the United States of America to the spirit of independence.
What is that socialist punk thicky as Jesse Jackson?
Apparently, he did this on his own initiative.
Politicians don't have initiative.
Now we're at a crossroads, my friends. Today in Washington, the drums of war are steadily beating.
I fear this administration can no longer hear the voice of the people.
You're not going to let the people hear Canadian Jesus.
What Oliver Mighton has done is to hold all votes in the limbo of the machine's flash memory. As long as candidate B is winning, the ghost remains hidden. But if A pulls ahead, a simple algorithm rejigs the totals to ensure that candidate B will win by a one-point margin.
They're going to rig the American election.
Wouldn't be the first time.
It's a fight between two superpowers, and neither of them will listen to any of us. Buckle up.
We're going to install Tom McLaughlin as the next president of the United States of America.
What is it good for? I will strip this country of its uniform. No longer will the face of this nation be razor wire and Kevlar. And they took my country, I'll take theirs. I'm the Trojan horse, baby. Nice present. But wait till the sun sets. That's when the belly opens.
Okay, so that was the trailer for the movie that I just watched, Trojan Horse, and as I say, it's kind of a long movie. It was like 3 hours long, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, it just keeps moving. It is long, and you kind of wonder where it's all going to end at. But and I don't know. It's really good. I don't know, as a plot. It was probably kind of too long. It would be more like, at times I felt like I was watching a television series, but you know, with all the kind of the twists and turns. But on the other hand, I enjoyed it. So if, you know, now this was obviously I don't know if it made, I don't even think I had heard of it before until I ran into it on Netflix. I'm not even sure what year it was made in, but you know, and then the actors that they have in it, I didn't really recognize. But it's well made, nice cinematography. The DVD looked great. Even it wasn't a Blu-ray, but it was just a DVD, but it looked very good. There were, unfortunately, on the DVD itself, there were no, all they had were just chapter selections and then the trailer and the movie itself, and they didn't have any extras, DVD extras that kind of told you about the movie, which was kind of unfortunate. But in any case, if you are a Netflix member and, you know, that's probably worth putting on your list. And I don't think it's available streaming yet. It probably will be at some point. Of course, now, that reminds me, I haven't mentioned it in a while, I do have a Netflix affiliate on my website. If you go to TruckerTomPodcast.com and you look in the show notes, you'll see a little red square box that says Netflix, you know, sign up. And just so you know, in the interest of full disclosure, if you do sign up for the 14-day free trial through Netflix, you know, and you do sign up for the Netflix and you become a Netflix customer, they pay me. You know, I do make a little bit of money off of that. And, you know, as I've said before, I'm not going to be like Adam Curry and John Dvorak and other podcasters that are begging for money. I just don't see myself being able to do that. But on the other hand, I will sell you something, especially if I use it myself and I find that it's of value. Now, this movie that I just watched, Trojan Horse, that, you know, I ran into that just a few days ago, and I went ahead and just put that at the head of, you know, at the top of my Netflix queue. So as soon as I sent, you know, I had this Star Trek, the latest Star Trek movie on Blu-ray, I watched it the other night. I sent it back, and bang, I mean, just as soon as they got it, they same day shipping, they sent it right back out, and it actually came in yesterday's mail. And so I got it back very quickly, and didn't watch it till tonight, though. But so that one was from Netflix, and then Outland was is the other one that I watched that I'm going to play the trailer for here in a minute. It's an older movie. Sean Connery is the star, and it's very interesting. It's kind of a sci-fi type movie, and I guess it was from 1981 here. It's from 1981. But it's kind of an interesting movie, and I had never seen it before, actually. And so I thoroughly enjoyed watching that the other night, even though it meant that I, you know, I could have stopped watching it at some point, but I got thoroughly involved with it, and I ended up staying up until probably about 4 o'clock in the morning, and but, you know, I was able to stream it right through, you know, to my Blu-ray player, right to my, the TV there in my bedroom, the 40-inch Sony, LCD, stream it right in there and watch it, and, thoroughly enjoyed it. But, so here is the, trailer for, Outland. This is from 1981. And Sean Connery is the main actor.
In a mining town on the second moon of Jupiter, something deadly is happening.
Pretty soon we'll see that this is just like every other mining town. I work these people hard, and I let them play. There's never much trouble. We're all professionals.
I'm sure we are. We've only been here 2 weeks. A little bit better, I promise.
I got nothing more on that incident in the mine yesterday. It looks like some guy just went wacko.
It happens here.
How often?
I don't know. It just happens here.
Fine.
I'm not a psychiatrist. I can't tell you why. Some people just can't take it here after a while.
What's that guy think he's doing?
No way it could have been homicide. Had to have been a suicide.
28 in the last 6 months.
Did you do autopsy?
No.
Then how do you know it was a suicide?
There's no other explanation.
When a person exposes himself to zero pressure atmosphere, there isn't a whole lot left to inspect.
Something's there, isn't it?
Maybe.
Try and meddle, I want you to know what you're meddling with. How do you leave? Dealing with grown-ups here.
Bingo.
Marshall. You're dead.
If you're the kind of guy you're supposed to be, you wouldn't stick around. That's why they sent you here.
Maybe they made a mistake.
The ultimate enemy is still man.
And so that was the trailer for a movie called Outland, starring Sean Connery, from 1981. Kind of an interesting movie. It's kind of a sci-fi sort of thing, and it's kind of nitty-gritty. It's got a kind of a nitty-gritty look, but it's very interesting nonetheless. Now, otherwise, I've just, you know, besides kind of playing with that server, I've kind of been, as I say, just hanging around the house, mostly, part of the time not really feeling all that energetic. Now, when was it? Night before last. You know, I really wasn't sick to my stomach, but I almost was on the verge of it, and I was feeling kind of bad enough. I went to bed, I guess it was around a little bit after 7, I went to bed. This would have been a couple of evenings ago, I guess Tuesday evening. Went to bed about 7, and then, or a little after, and then woke up, I don't know, it was a little after 11, got up for several hours, then went back to bed and slept some more, and I felt a little bit better the next day. That would have been yesterday, but still not quite really up to par. So I don't know. At this point, as I say, I am feeling probably as good as I have in, you know, the entire week. You know, and for some reason, I noticed this afternoon, I noticed that shoulder, you know, I was able to raise the arm better than I had been. So it's still not completely up to par, but certainly better, you know. And I don't know. I don't think I had any kind of flu, although that's always possible. Because I was, on the other hand, you know, there were some other muscles, you know, like the muscles in my arms, like biceps in particular, were feeling kind of achy. And maybe my body was feeling kind of achy too. Now, I didn't have any kind of temperature or anything. So I might have, it's entirely possible that I might have had something, and I just thought it was because I didn't get enough rest. But, you know, and if I did, then that would certainly, if, you know, if something's going to ache, then, if you've already got something that's injured, that's kind of prone to aching anyway, it's probably would make it worse. So I guess, you know, there's that possibility too. I think I just didn't get enough sleep, but who knows? So, but I've just been, now one of the other things I did, I've kind of made sure that I've got everything plugged into the network that I can. I don't know if I've talked about that at all or not, but you know, I've kind of gone around and made sure that that I'm plugging everything into the network as far as the Blu-ray player instead of going through Wi-Fi, because it will go through Wi-Fi, but you're really better off. You're going to get much better performance if it's plugged in through Ethernet. You know, Ethernet's been around forever as a standard, and it's extremely reliable versus Wi-Fi, which can... Wi-Fi can be kind of flaky from time to time, and it's not really meant to transfer a massive amount of files, you know, because it, you know, Wi-Fi will kind of mess up. It's, you know, it depends. The Wi-Fi reliability kind of depends on the router behind it. And certainly, you know, this Apple router that I have is pretty reliable. But even at that, it's not really the best way to transfer files. And then the other problem with Wi-Fi, and, you know, you can run into this in a lot of different places, and certainly in the, you know, in your home. If you've got any other kind of wireless devices that are sort of wireless consumer devices, that can actually interfere with the Wi-Fi signal and cause the Wi-Fi transfer speeds to slow down. And I've actually, I don't know, I was, well, you know, how did that, okay, I'm trying to remember how I've kind of figured it out, but I found out that my microwave oven actually interferes with Wi-Fi. You know, if you have a Wi-Fi device, probably it depends on how close a proximity you have the, like a Wi-Fi, like a laptop or something close to the microwave. You know, I did discover that it actually does affect the speed of the Wi-Fi. It does interfere with it. And so different types of devices, even cordless phones, can interfere with it. So it's, Wi-Fi is great for casual use, and, you know, like, you know, downloading files, and yeah, as long as the files aren't too huge. But, you know, you start dealing with and it's generally true with anything, you start dealing with massive files, gigabyte range files, and you're far better off if it's plugged into the network, or even plugged into even plugged in directly through USB or FireWire or something. Then you're going to get much better throughput. But so I've made a point of, I already had a wire running back, like, to my bedroom where I've got my Blu-ray player kind of hooked up, and the Apple TV's in there, and I've got that other laptop computer in there that I use to stream services like Hulu and other things. I've just made sure that all of those are connected through the Ethernet, and kind of same way with the other devices. It's just a good idea to, and especially with backup. Since I've been backing things up, I've just been making sure that I plug the machine into the Ethernet for the backup part. And, you know, for that initial full backup, and then incremental backups should be, you know, depending on how big they are, should be able to go through Wi-Fi without too much trouble. It just kind of depends on how massive they end up being. So, after I'd already plugged the Blu-ray player into the network, you know, when I was watching that Outland movie through Netflix, I would say that was, that approached DVD quality. It really looked pretty good. It wasn't HD, because Netflix does not do HD, but Netflix actually can kind of approximate DVD quality. Now, that's pretty good. You know, it's certainly looked pretty good on the screen, and streaming. It's still, I don't know, I've realized that there'd be services like that, you know, like Netflix. There would eventually be services like that, but You know, and eventually we're going to have every movie and every piece of media right at our fingertips. You know, if we may have to pay something if we want to watch it, but everything will eventually become available. And, you know, that's pretty amazing, you know, and that's really where the whole technology is kind of headed. But now, the government is kind of trying to take bandwidth away from broadcasters, the TV broadcasters. They're telling them, well, if you're not using all of your digital signal, then we're going to take part of it, or make you sell it, or whatever. And I don't know. I don't want to see broadcast go away. I know that their numbers are probably down, and it's kind of an old technology, and people don't really want to have to watch on somebody else's timetable. I want to watch when I want to watch what I want to watch. But on the other hand, I'm happy that the broadcasters are still there, because while I've been home, sometimes I'll just kind of flip through the channels. You know, now like the other night when I was in the kitchen kind of cooking, and I've got the TV in the kitchen there, and so I kind of turned it on, and there was this really interesting. There's a show on PBS called Frontline. And they had this, Frontline is, they're always kind of provocative documentaries, and they're very well done. And they had this one about, it was about the bubble, the housing bubble, and they talked about financial bubbles. And they kind of went into the psychology of why they happen. And it was a fascinating episode. Now, I think they make those available. You can watch those. I do believe you can watch those from the PBS website, because I've done that before. But that one is, I don't remember the name of it. I didn't catch it because I caught it after it had already started, and I watched a good, the most of it, through the end of it. But it was very interesting, because they were talking about financial bubbles and how they happen, and they kind of went into the psychology of it. And of course, nowadays, after this housing thing and all the traders and what have you, they've been doing studies, and the studies, they've been experimenting with college students, and it's very interesting. This one experiment, I can't remember quite all the details that they did, but they kind of took, I think, like, let's say 24 students, and they sort of set them up as they'd be kind of like modern-day traders, in front of their computer screens, trying to quantify risk. And so they gave them, in this experiment, they gave each student so much of an asset, whatever the asset was, now this was make-believe, but it was an experiment, and they had the computer tools, and each one of them had their computer and their own little cubicle, and, they gave them an asset, and they gave them a fixed timeline that this asset, you can trade the asset, but over time, the asset is going to become worthless. Over a certain period of time, the asset's going to become worthless. So in the meantime, all of these students start trading these assets, trading. And so they begin to bid the price up. And the price is at the very highest toward the end, when the asset value, the fixed asset value, is almost a zero. And so what ends up happening, there's this bubble effect where the price really gets bid up, even though the real value is declining, and then all of a sudden everybody panics and they dump it, they sell. And that's not, when I was watching that, it was interesting, because it caused me to realize that that's not just limited to financial behavior. When people... you know, really what they were talking about, right? And, you know, and they didn't realize that they were talking about it, obviously, strictly in the context of this experiment and in the finances and the psychology of it. But they were really kind of talking also about fads, because the same thing happens with fads, even if it's not necessarily money value. Although it can get into it, you know, and I can give you an example. You remember the Furbies? You remember Beanie Babies? You know, these toys that they were selling, and you know, and they become fads, and then people actually begin buying them and trying to sell them for more than they buy them for, and they actually do that. Well, you know, they're able to do that, especially if there's a shortage of the product. They're probably doing that right now with Apple iPads. And, you know, there's this perceived thing that, it's really highly desirable product, and people will bid the price up well beyond what the thing is worth. And inevitably what happens, like what happened with the Beanie Babies, eventually they were, you know, the fad ran its course, and the things are probably next to worthless. The same thing with the Furbies. At one time there was a shortage, probably about 10 years ago, those things were hot. They were just red hot in the marketplace, and people wanted them, and you couldn't buy them, and so people were buying quantities of them and selling them. I think eBay was around then, selling them on eBay, and for more than they paid for them in the retail store. And you know, that's just a small example, but that's an example of how fads, you know, kind of fads sort of go pass through the public. And it's a fascinating thing. It's quite fascinating, you know, how, you know, people will all kind of go in a herd, sort of a herd mentality. And I think that's really more of a, you know, because they're studying the psychology of it, and they think, well, this is repeatable, but it may be repeatable with the general public. But, you know, my question is the average person, is there anything wrong with them? Of course there is. The average person may be average, but they may have their average faults, but you know that there's something wrong with those faults, you know, and you know that they're looking at it, well, this is just normal human psychology. I'm looking at it, why are these people so suggestible that just because all the other people are doing it, they feel like they can do it, they should do it too, and get in on the action. You get to the point where people were buying houses, way more house than they could actually afford, and, oh, we're buying this for an investment. We're going to buy this house and then sell it and double our money. And, of course, that there were people that did do that. You know, they may have tripled their money. They did that for a while, and then finally, at the end, you know, you had that massive sell-off, big panic, and the stuff, you know, especially the subprime mortgages at the end, they were just worthless. You know, next to worthless, and people that bought these massive houses. And they were, oh, well, this is an investment, you know, they kind of get stuck with them. And then, of course, the house value plummets, and they're stuck with this massive mortgage. And so if common sense were able to prevail in the middle of that, and there were plenty of people that didn't participate, I didn't participate in that. At one time, this is several years ago, I was kind of looking, at one point I went to the bank and I was kind of looking to maybe refinance and, you know, kind of get a lower rate, because there was this period of time where everybody was just refinancing. This was a few years ago. And so I was looking at that. Well, all that they would, you know, all that they were offering me was, you know, because what I wanted to do, I was going to buy the land that my house is on. I was going to buy this 2.5 acres from my parents. And, you know, I've got this double, I've got a double wide mobile home. And I was going, you know, that's, you know, and, the, you know, that's been on the land, you know, my parents originally owned the land, 5 acres, and I was on the, you know, half of it. And, so I was going to buy the, I was looking to buy the 2.5 acres from them. And so I thought, well, you know, I might just be able to get some kind of a package deal from the bank. Well, you know, well, they tried to offer me some kind of a screwy thing, you know, balloon mortgage thing. And, you know, it had a, you know, kind of a massive payment. And, you know, and I just wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. And so I, you know, I just didn't do it that way. I did buy the land from my parents, but I didn't finance it. So, you know, and I just kept the same mortgage, basically, that I had before. Well, I, at that point, but I ended up at some point later than that, I did refinance it with another, with the house with another company. So I owned the land outright. And the double wide mobile home, you know, I'm still paying for. But and recently, in recent months, I've started paying. I've actually started paying a couple $100 extra a month on it, and that's going to really, you know, if I keep up with that, that's really going to knock, you know, the interest down over time. That's really going to speed up the payback. So, you know, get rid of the payment. And, but, you know, I could have, at that point, I could have, you know, I was kind of offered some sort of really what would have been a subprime loan, and, kind of gotten myself in trouble. You know, it's easy for people to think, oh, the bank wants to loan me the money. It means that they must think that I've, that, you know, that I, they trust that I can pay it back. You know, there's this mentality that people had that, And so I'm sure some people still have it that, well, if the credit card company will give me, you know, if they're offering me the credit or the bank's offering me the credit, then that must mean that I have the ability to pay it. And so that then people will just go right up to the, you know, to the limit and beyond of what they can actually afford, you know, as far as payments go. And then whenever the crunch comes, whenever their income goes down, or if it's a two-income family and one of them gets sick or whatever, and it's inevitable, then, you know, then they're in big trouble. Especially if it's a two-income, kind of an overextended two-income household. And the higher the income, the worse it is. If they've got, you know, some big, you know, huge, massive payments, and then all of a sudden one of those big incomes is gone, and, you know, economy that's gone sour, and they're in big trouble. And so if they would have had common sense to begin with, they wouldn't have gotten themselves, they wouldn't have put themselves in that position. And then when the inevitable problem does come along, you know, they weren't overextended in the first place. And so it doesn't, they may, you know, the, it may affect them somewhat, but it's not going to affect them nearly as much as it would if they were... you know, if they'd have taken the bait and they were really overextended. So, I don't know. But I guess what I'm saying is that if you've got some common sense, then it's going to stop you from doing a lot of the things that other people do. Just, you know, it's like your mom says when you're a kid, well, you want to do that? Just, well, all the other kids are doing it. You know, that's the common excuse that little kids give. All the other kids are doing it. I want to do it too. You know, and then mom or dad says, well, if they were all jumping off the cliff, does that mean you jump off too? Probably yes, with most people. So, but in any case, this PBS show is quite fascinating, and, really enjoyed that. You know, sometimes they can have some interesting, especially the front line. You know, if I kind of catch that once in a while. Don't really make a point of watching it all the time, because some of them aren't quite as good as other ones are, but they can really have some interesting ones from time to time. So, and that is available, I think, on the PBS website. They've got, you know, the stuff is available to stream. So at least it was, and I'm sure it probably still is. Anyway, probably better be wrapping this up. See if I can try to get to bed here in a bit. Although I'm really, at this point, as I say, I'm really kind of feeling wide awake and kind of energetic. Whereas, you know, most of the week I haven't been. So, in any case, hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.